No, comrades, the way in sailing a corner, la, it would be a bit. So if I may request that we join Dr. George, I think it might be more workable. May we check, do we all have copies of the program? So that in case you don't, please raise your hand and don't be at your service. Right, in case we all have copies, then that's fine. Secondly, can we make a request that let us switch our cellular phones off? Unlike the previous hearing, comrades, this will be recorded. So unfortunately, if the phone is on, even if it's on silent or vibration, once it starts vibrating, it affects the recording. So whatever is being said during that time. So we are pleading for simple compliance. Just switch off your cellular phone. I've switched mine off. So please just check your phone and make sure it is, so that it doesn't surprise you and start ringing in the middle of the hearing. And that applies to members of parliament as well. Please check your phones and make sure that it is off. Having said that, we would like to welcome the Deputy Minister of Higher Education. Comrade Deputy Minister, you are heartily welcomed. We're happy to have you with us here and the delegation that you are leading. I know we have someone from National Treasury as well as the Auditor General's Office. So by way of starting, Comrade Deputy Minister, we'll hand over to you and your delegation to introduce yourselves and also National Treasury, the AG's office, as well as members of parliament, so that as we engage, we at least know who is here. So I'll hand over to you, Comrade Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Lengwe Mkhize. I'm the Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training. I'm accompanied by the Director General.
I'm sure, Comrade Deputy Minister, can allow them to introduce themselves, so at least we can hear their voices.
Okay. I was going to hand over to you. Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Chairperson, I'm here to introduce CFO of the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, members. My name is Ngaba Mandela. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Ministry.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Hannes Wind from the Department of Higher Education and Training, specifically dealing with CETAS. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Yvonne Boso. I'm Department of Higher Education and Training. I'm Head of Legal Services.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Koko Mashiko. I am the Chairperson of the PCTA Board.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Shamira Huleman, the PCTA CEO.
Good morning, Members. I'm Sade Lowasa. I'm the Chairperson of the Audit Committee, PCTA.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Thabo Sibaya, CFO of PCTA.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. I'm Kenny Govender, Department of Public Service and Administration, representing the Minister and the DG. Thanks.
Honourable Chair and members, my name is Sihle Moon, Administrator Services Centre.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. My name is Doris Dondur. I'm the Chairperson of the Audit Committee of the Service Centre.
Morning, members. I'm Don Vidal, Finance Manager of the Centre.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Temba Chikobi. I'm a Director at KPMG. We do internal audit for Services Centre.
Morning, Honourable Chairman. I'm Patrick Moll from KPMG, a director previously responsible for internal audit at CETA, Service CETA.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Matthias Chapello. I'm a Director, Accounting Support and Reporting, National Treasury.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Members. I'm Gillian Wilson, Public Finance, National Treasury.
Thank you very much.
Morning, members. May Singkang, Auditor General.
Morning, members. Ring Robler, Auditor General.
Morning, members. Michelle Pellet, Auditor General.
Thank you. Can we have members of parliament introducing themselves? Starting here.
Roy Ainsley, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Tapelo Sulwane, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Dion George, I'm a member of SCOPA.
My name is Pierre Robbie, and I'm a member of SCOPA.
Good morning, my name is Gertrude Tsar, and I'm a member of SCOPA.
Yabuli Saksal, you will not see more Palin Vela, Ilungule SCOPA.
Morning, Sarah Manyama, member of this room. Chairperson, he's disturbing me here.
He does that all the time. You should be used to it by now. Please introduce yourself.
Sarah Manyama, member of SCOPA.
Sorry. Slamrawa Television, Lilokola, Komitia, Sabamela, Matatrafta.
Okay. Thanks, comrades. I'm Comrade Temba Godi. I chair this committee. Comrade Deputy Minister, we intend to have an early day today, by all accounts, when I checked with my comrades here. And that will be assisted a great deal by a very simple and straightforward response to the issues that the members are going to raise. As you are aware, we do have serious challenges in the two sitters that we have called to come before this committee. For two reasons. One being that the way in which the affairs of the sitters are managed, especially around financial management, is not at the desirable level. But secondly, because of the mandate that sitters have in the broader scheme of things in our country, it cannot be that they are allowed to operate at a level below the minimum expectations. So we felt it's only correct for us as Parliament to have this engagement so that our areas of concerns can be clarified, but we can also collectively say how do we find solutions going forward. So I think that's what there is to it. An exchange of information to get a sense of where we are at, how did it happen that things, you know, deteriorated to this level. Unfortunately, like we always say, we deal with what kills the patient. that's our work. We look back in order to move forward, to understand the rationale and the basis of why things happened. So, like I indicated, Comrade Minister, you are very much free to assist in clarifying issues, but at the end, if there are still issues that you feel do need to be clarified, you will be afforded the opportunity to do so. Let me hand over to Dr. Rabi. Start with the...
Thank you, Chair. Chair, some of my questions will overlap, but I'm going to start with a going concern. Is that correct? Can I start there? That's going to be my first question. And first and foremost, the CETA has been placed under administration in April 2010, and what is also very significant, Chair, is that they received a disclaimer audit, which it's explained, and maybe there are reasons for, but I'd like to get more clarity on that. But before I start with that, the Special Investigations Unit is also busy conducting a number of investigations. I'll come to that later on, but first and foremost, I want to know now, you've got a special arrangement with the Department of Higher Education and the Department of Public Service and Administration. Now, apparently some of your members are still members of the Department of Public Service and Administration. How many of them are still members of service and administration? And apparently it has caused a number of problems regarding the discipline of some of these members. I'd like to ask the CEO to elaborate upon the special relationship with the Department of Public Service and Administration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Member. I think the PCETA, relatively compared to all other CETAs that we established in terms of the Skills Development Act, we were in a different space. We didn't actually function as a CETA since our establishment in 2000 due to the fact that the levy arrangement, we're all aware that CETAs contribute 1% of the payroll of every company via SARS.
We're aware of that.
Okay.
Context. Where are we now? Okay. How are we moving forward?
Yeah, just to lead on to that is that our relationship with the DPSA has been initially in a dual reporting way in terms of the fact that PCETA was within the DPSA as a chief directorate. But since the 1st of April 2011, post the administration period, we have now are operationally independent of the DPSA. Currently, we do have 6 DPSA staff members that are still seconded within the PCETA. The majority of them did go back to the DPSA on the 1st of April of 2011. Now, when our licensing period ends at the end of this month, 31st of March, there would be a decision by the 6 staff members to make a choice between remaining with the DPSA or staying with the PCETA. Yes, I agree with the Honourable Member. It does have some implications for discipline, because secondment arrangements in the public service is that when you are seconded to another entity, the policies of the employing department still will be applied to the employees. So, for example, with performance management and discipline, the DPSA still manages them in terms of their policies. Now, during the administration period, 2 employees that were implicated in the PwC forensic report were returned, should I say, to the DPSA with a request by the administrator that disciplinary procedures need to be initiated against the respective employees. So that's the...
My follow-up question is, you mentioned the investigation by PwC. Has this been completed?
There was a preliminary investigation to do an assessment on the severity of the allegations and the period that we wanted the PwC to, the SIU to investigate. They have come with a pre-assessment report to the board saying that they would need to apply for a presidential proclamation. The board has supported that. And they are at the stage where the motivation for the presidential proclamation is being finalized. So we are at that stage now that we are awaiting the presidential proclamation so that they have full powers of subpoenaing, seizure, and...
That's fine. So we're still at the stage of finalizing motivations for... All right.
Can I carry on, Chair? Thank you. How many vacancies are there at senior management level in your procedure, vacancies? Is it possible to give us something at the committee?
There's just, from our executive management, we filled all of the posts. There's just one vacancy, a project manager, which we are in the process of filling. But since administration in the last 12 months, we filled all executive management positions.
Can I carry on to irregular expenditure? In 2005, Madam Chief Executive Officer, in 2005, some money was taken from the National Skills Fund. Has that particular investigation been completed? It's 2012, and the Special Investigation Unit, have they given their findings regarding that the National Skills Fund in 2005? Can you give us an indication on that, please? Thank you.
Honourable Member, that matter also is referred to the SIU. For investigation. The period that the SIU would be investigating is from 2005 up to 2010 until the seat was placed under administration. So we're still waiting for the full-blown investigation by the SIU.
Except that the law mistake its course, but 2005 and 2012, it's 7 years. And I think the sooner the finding is made public, the better, because 7 years is cause of concern. Carry on further. On page 57 of your report, you mentioned there that there's a register of irregular expenditure. Has this particular register been updated? Is it completed? Because that's been said there. And I'd like to have the views of the Chief Financial Officer or the Chief Executive Officer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. We are keeping the register of all irregular expenditure, but in this case, this was just a once-off between the 2008 and 2009 financial year, which is under the investigation of the SIU. But going forward, during the period of administration and also during this financial year, there is a register of all irregular expenditure.
Chair, I'd like to go to page 57. There are a number of items mentioned there of irregular expenditure. And I'd like to mention there the payment of board fees were from National Skills Fund. And has this been rectified? Is it still carrying on? Because that is it's not in accordance with the PFMA.
Correct, Honourable Members. Some board members were paid from the NSF fund, which as a result became irregular. But during the period under review, there were no board members paid from the NSF. We were paying board members from our administration allocation through the DPSA.
Please switch on your mic, Honourable Ravi.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether this question relates to the chief financial officer or the chief executive officer, but I'd like to know the relationship between CETA and the Department of Public Service and Administration regarding the payment of levies and so forth. Has this been cleared now, and is this in accordance with the PFMA? Thank you.
Honourable members, the PCTA receives levies from some public entity in the region of 90,000 per annum. In terms of Skills Development Act, government departments are not compelled to pay levies to the PCTA. And this is the status quo at the moment. It has not changed.
Thank you. I'd like to go to page 48. Chair, I'd like to have the audit committees. If you look at the audit committee there, the page on page 48 and 49, they say that the first audit committee they were disbanded by the Honourable Minister, and a new one was appointed. But I'd like to have the views there regarding the report. They were not very satisfied with the report of the Auditor General. So I'd like to have the views of the Audit Committee. Why was there disagreement with the findings of the Auditor General?
Thanks, Everson. The audit committee was trying to carry out the responsibilities as in terms of the Section 76 of PFMA, that we have to express an opinion on the work of the Auditor General as the external auditor. And in that regard, we have had a number of engagements, which are continuing, trying to resolve the issues that led to the disagreement. And at the moment, we are still engaging with the Auditor General. But for purposes of making sure that the reader of the annual report has got a balanced view, we had to express that opinion in our report. That is where we're standing, Chairperson.
On page,
can we maybe check on that one? Were you disagreeing on the substance of the findings or on the characterization of the findings?
Okay, we disagreed on technical grounds and therefore not the substance of the report, but the characterization.
Not on the substance.
Not on the substance.
Well, I must say that it is a first for us to have that kind of an opinion in the annual report. I don't know whether it is right or wrong, but I'm just saying it is a first. Because the areas of difference appear to be technical and not substantive. So if the AG says this is black, you say no, it is green, and you raise that difference. And yet what is critical is the substance, because whether you call it green or black, it does not change the substance. And yet what we must deal with is the substance that is there. So I'll not go into that, because like I say, it is a fact. I don't know how to treat it.
Jim, my impression was that they had no confidence in the audit findings of the Auditor General. And as you say, this is the first time that it's come across to me. But Jim, let's carry on a wee bit further. On page 87, note 23 of your report, your current liabilities exceed assets by 19.9 million. That's note 23. And apparently there's an interministerial task team which has investigated this particular state of affairs. Can we have some further clarity on that, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Our assets, our liability exceed our assets. This is as a result of a deferred income liability or liability that visitor owe NSF as at the end of the financial year. This dates the money that was given to the visitor to run the project in 2005. The NSF is saying visitor did not submit all the relevant documentation, hence this liability of the NSF 30 million, which resulted in 19.9 liabilities exceeding the assets. The IMTT, I'm not privy to the information of the IMTT progress. Maybe I can, through the my chairperson, maybe we'll direct in respect to that.
May I, Honourable Chairperson?
Well, actually, you should have been responding right from the beginning.
Yeah. Thank you. With regards to the IMTT, this is a task team that was created by the Minister of Higher Education to look into the funding model for the TCETA. As we have previously reported, that we don't get levies from government except from a few public entities. We have attended one of the meetings with the department. It's driven from the Department of Higher Education and Training, and also there is input from the Department of Public Service and Administration. And the information that we are receiving is that there is progress on the matter, and then it still has to be taken through various cabinet governance structures. But the matter is receiving attention, and we are hopeful that we will receive a favorable response from the IMTT process.
Chair, in the report of the Auditor General, I mentioned the fact there that the Chief Financial Officer was only available for 2 days because he was seconded to the construction CETA for interviews. Now, Chair, I think that, with due respect, I think that the Auditor General should get precedent, or must be able to interview leaders, because none of these particular departments are so important that they can negate or that they can second the Chief Financial Officer to other seats. I think, with due respect, Chair, that should not happen. That it mustn't happen in the future again. That's my considered opinion, and I think with you, I make an appeal to the management to see that mustn't happen again. I think that's something. Chair, then I'd just like to mention a couple of other things. The apparently 800,000 rand was budgeted in 2 installments for a forensic report and so forth. How far has that particular report been completed yet or not? I'd like to get the views from the Chief Executive Officer regarding that, please.
Honourable Chairperson, to you, Honourable Member, yes, the 800,000 rand is for that SIU pre-assessment report that I spoke about earlier on. So they have done, they've completed the pre-assessment phase that costed 800,000, and they have now brought the report to the board, and now it will go for a full-blown investigation. The indication is that the SIU would cover the cost within their own budget for the full-blown investigation. Thank you.
Okay, my last question is...
Just a minute. That last part about the SIU, is that your understanding or that is their written commitment? In terms of covering the cost.
Yes, Chair. They did give an undertaking at a board meeting when we did clarify with them, because they're going ahead with the proclamation motivation. They have not given us any quotes. They did indicate that they would budget for this particular investigation within their own baseline.
Maybe, Chairperson, to add to that, I think it would be safe at this point to say they will send us a plan. With that plan, it will indicate whether they will be carrying the costs or who will be carrying the costs. But we have indicated to them our constraints relating to us carrying the costs. That is why the undertaking. At this stage, it's a verbal undertaking. Until the plan has been presented to us, we will be able to confidently say yay or nay.
All right. Dr. Rabi, continue.
Chair, with due respect, Chairman, I believe that this particular committee, the seat appeared before this committee when I was not a member of this committee. But Chairman, with due respect, I think this is the performance audit of this particular organization will have to improve, because its core function is to provide skills to the civil service, which at the moment I think it can be improved. And I've got no further questions to ask, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Do we have follow-up questions from comrades? I'll start with the KZN. Yeah, sure.
Chair, I just want to take issue with the Audit Committee regarding their references in their annual report disputing the AG's findings. I think it is highly regrettable that is features in your annual report. If you have differences of opinion with the AG, I think those, Chair, should be discussed with the Auditor General and should not really feature in your over almost 2 pages in your annual report. In any event, I think your assessment is wrong. I think that the misstatements in your financial statements are both material and pervasive. You agree they are material. They are also, by the very definitions which you include in your audit report, they are also pervasive. You give three elements to your definition of pervasiveness. And the misstatements here conform to each one of those three pervasive elements. For example, the NSF funds represent almost 5% of your income. If your income is, approximately 600 million, the NSF funds in dispute for 30, that's almost 5% of your income. That's very pervasive. How more pervasive can you get than when your reserves, your opening balance is in dispute, your closing balance is in dispute. Every item there, but in between your opening balance and your closing balance is in dispute. Surely that's pervasive, Chair. So I want to disagree with you. I don't like your approach to this. I think in future, if you have disputes of this nature, their place is not in your annual report. It is around the table with the Auditor General, where maybe you can find one another. I think it's regrettable that this features in the... It's my comment. I don't know if it's up for debate, but then I have one or two questions.
I think that was a comment.
It is a comment. Sorry, it is quite a lengthy comment. Chair, one or two questions. It was reported that PwC did an initial investigation. I don't understand why that is necessary. If there's prima facie evidence of wrongdoing, and you know well in advance that PricewaterhouseCoopers has no subpoena powers, no investigative powers really, no prosecutorial powers, why then spend the time, the energy, and the money on engaging private consultants to do an initial investigation? If there's an inkling of wrongdoing, go direct to the Hawks, go direct to the SIU. I don't understand why you go via PwC. Obviously, at the end of the day, they say, sorry, there's nothing more we can do, we can't subpoena. But how much did you spend in that process? How long did that process take? Can you please explain why you go to a private consultant knowing full well they cannot properly investigate? And then at the end of the day, logically, your hands are tied, their hands are tied, you've got to go to the official investigative agencies of the country. I don't understand. I want to know why.
what you spent on PwC and how long the investigation took.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Just to indicate that this was initiated by the former acting CEO in 2007. The cost was 800,000 rand for the PwC investigation. It was completed and the report was submitted to the former board in July 2010. So it did take 3 years.
That's my point. 3 years of wasted effort. 800,000 rand for what? To tell you at the end of the day, sorry, we've got no power to subpoena. You should have known that in advance, or whoever gave that instruction. I mean, it's highly irregular.
Honourable Member, I just need to indicate that the new executive management and the accounting authorities in full agreement with SCOPA over this particular issue of the use of an agency like PwC to do such an investigation. It doesn't bring the necessary results as quickly as possible. Thanks.
Okay, one other question. You indicated that I think two or three people who were in the ploy of the CETA then went back to the DPSA, and you requested that disciplinary measures be taken against them. Did that in fact occur?
Honourable Chair, I'm not in a position to answer that. I think the DPSA representative who is present may be able to answer that question.
No, but surely they committed wrongdoing in the CETA. Surely that it is your responsibility to ensure that at the end of the day these people are disciplined, wherever they are, in particular if they're still in the public service. That is your responsibility. They committed these acts not while under the employ of the DPSA directly, but directly under your employ. Therefore, it is your interest to ensure that these disciplinary measures proceeded with. I don't understand why you did not monitor the situation.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Member, the public service regulations are very clear that we cannot institute any disciplinary measures. It has to be the DPSA.
I don't think that is his point. You send the officials back to the department with a recommendation that disciplinary measures must be taken against them. I suppose you wrote them a letter. Did you get a response on that letter? And what was the response? And from there, that's where his question starts. So you wrote them a letter, disciplined these people, they said thank you, acknowledge receipt of your letter, and then you turned your back on the case.
Yes, we did receive a response from the DPSA that they would start with disciplinary procedures. We are aware, not that there was any written communication post that, but in terms of monitoring, we are aware that the procedures have begun.
But you have just said you can't answer. You need the rep from the department to respond. We thought it means that you don't know what happened.
The specifics, Chair, sorry, apologies, but the specifics around whether, you know, how far the, whether the people have been charged, I'm not aware of that. But we do know the hearings have begun.
Interested in knowing. And you will monitor the proceedings. Am I right?
It's our responsibility to monitor. We do agree, Chair.
Who's from the department who can give us more light?
Chair, Kenny Governor, DPSA. Just to indicate, yes, the disciplinary process has been initiated within DPSA with regard to both those employees. It's interesting to note that one of the employees has since left the employer of DPSA. The other individual is still within DPSA, but the disciplinary process is currently ongoing.
Maybe can we check what misdemeanors have they committed?
Chair, without going into the specifics, man,
that's exactly what we want, the specifics. I mean, if you don't give us specifics, what's the point of responding? One specifics, what did they do?
Chair, my understanding in relation to the charges against both of them is their involvement in the actual process of the funds and poor managerial oversight. in relation to one. It's the main charge as per the SIU and NPA recommendation.
Well, how much are we talking about? How much money was misused or mismanaged that led to these disciplinary measures against these two officials?
Chair, I stand to be corrected, but my understanding is the initial amount in relation to two individuals that have been charged with the theft of the money, and they are in prison at the moment, were previously employees, one of them employees of DPS, the financial officer in relation to Max Munyai. He's been charged. He's now serving a prison term in relation to that particular theft. The NPA initial, the National Prosecuting Authority's initial assessment was around 900,000 rand.
You see, Comrade Deputy Minister, that's where our problem starts. Asking a simple question, how much is involved? By the time you mentioned 900,000, I was a bit trying to understand exactly what are we dealing with. And now you are bringing a new dimension of somebody who is in prison. I don't know how that person is linked to the two officials that you say one has already left, unless if the one who has left is the one who is in prison, and you have the one who is still in the department. I want to talk to these two that were referred back to you by the PCT. They're charged with a mismanagement or misappropriation of funds. And all I'm asking is, how much is involved in relation to these two? If it's separate, this one is charged for misappropriating 500,000, and the other one is charged for misappropriating 200,000. Surely there should be some element of detail around that. Well, I want that from the department and also from the PCT. I mean, if you say discipline these people, what for? You are the people who should finish the details. How much are we talking about here?
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the PwC report, the unverified payments were amounting 10.8 million. And the material loss in terms of the fraudulent transactions by the former project finance manager who is now in prison was 1.4 million.
What is the role of these two we're talking about? It's very interesting, the report you're giving about the person in prison. We're talking about these two that you sent back to DPSA with their tail between their legs for DC measures. One left. Now, what amounts are we talking about? I mean, if it's a law, and you're talking in millions there, I mean, is it not worth, for example, pursuing the person that's left? Give us more detail. What amounts? Are we talking about fraud? Everybody's being very vague. If they can't answer, let us just say, sorry, we can't answer. They may be in writing, they can at some stage, but it's pointless going on and on if they actually don't, between the entity and DPSA, in fact, don't have the answers. On their part, I must say that it does not show too much concern for people who do wrongdoing in the CETA and in the DPSA. But if they can't, they must say, we don't know.
No, they should. That's why they're here. I mean, what's the point of being here if we can't get answers?
I think maybe in trying to respond to that, for both the two employees, even the one that has resigned, is that these are issues that were brought to the attention of the SIU. So we've left the investigation to the SIU because from our part as PCTA, I don't want to speak for DPSA, but the understanding has been from the SIU team that we should not interfere with the investigation. So that is where the matter is right now.
Well, my question was around amounts. So it's the 10.8 million. That relates to these two employees, former employees. And then they went back to DPSA, and the other one was allowed to just resign.
So what has happened? He has resigned and he has solved the problem for you. Solved the hook or what is happening or what has happened.
Chair, I'm not in a position to respond to that. I mean, I don't know the facts. I know the individual has resigned. I'm not sure whether we've pursued further disciplinary action in post-resignation, no.
But if you come here without the facts, then what's the point of being here? Which part of your being here are you very detailed about? I mean, what's the point of being here if you don't have the facts? If you don't have the details of something very directly related to the CETA that they were engaging here today. Who in the department would have that detailed information?
The head of corporate services within the department.
See, Comrade Deputy Minister, this is part of the challenge we have. People mess. When they are facing TC, they resign. And then officials say, oh, well, he has resigned, so we can't pursue. All right, maybe we'll come back to it later.
Yeah. In relation to the SIU investigation, the brief that was given to SIU is to pursue current and former DPSA and PCTA officials. So the fact that the individuals are not in the employ of both PCTA and DPSA currently does not absolve them from the investigation and from being followed. And the proclamation for which we are waiting would cater into that because they would be subpoenaed by the SIU. So this is where the matter is, Chairperson. It's not that they are off the hook in terms of the investigation itself.
It's a very long hook. A three-year hook. By now he spent all his pension money. By now he's bought a chateau in France or somewhere. You will never get hold of him. I mean, they've taken 3 years playing around with the private sector. And who knows? It could be another 2 or 3 years. This is the problem we face. So many departments. People do not take these kinds of measures seriously.
Yeah, and our focus was more on the department. We know that there was one senior official in one entity who, when he was facing a disciplinary hearing, tendered his resignation, and the minister refused. He said, no, we can't allow you to resign. Give us 3 months' notice so we can finish your disciplinary process. So departments cannot, you know, shake their responsibilities with the hope that there is an SIU that is going to do the job for them. I think that's the point. The SIU investigation is no consolation because it does not come for free. I think that's what I know. And I know when they bring their brief, it's not going to be for free. You'll have to pay. So, it's... Yeah. Dr. George, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been looking at last year's annual report, which was quite sad reading, as is this one. And I was just looking at the difference between the audit committee then and now. And there does seem to be a number of people who are constant. There's only two new people that I can see, Mr. Gowden and Mr. Wasser, who is the chairperson. So there has been quite a lot of continuity on that particular score. Before I ask my question, I just want to say something regarding the statement of the audit committee regarding the exaggerated opinion of the Auditor General. Now, I sit on the Standing Committee on the Auditor General, and I see them all the time, and I hold them in very high regard. Now, my colleagues, I think, have been very kind to you. My view very much is that we are here to hold the executive to account and not to shout at the officials, so I won't be doing that. But I want you to understand that it is disgraceful what you have put into this report, because what it does, it says that we not only disagree with the Auditor General, but we publicly disagree. And then we say they exaggerate. And when they look at other entities, the question then starts to happen is, oh, well, are they exaggerating everywhere else? So you are undermining one of the most basic foundations of our democracy. I hope you understand what you're doing, because I'm very concerned that you don't. So having said that, was this the unanimous opinion of the audit committee to write this in this report?
Yes, it was.
Thank you. The internal audit department, please explain to me how the interface is working. So my understanding goes that there is an internal audit department. It does various things. It reports, it collects information, whatever. It then reports to the audit committee. And then the audit committee meets regularly, according to this report. It then processes the information that it receives, and then it does something. So I'd like to know, is that process working? So is the internal audit department working? Is it providing documentation? Is the audit committee applying its mind, and then what action is it taking, if any?
Yes, it does. The internal audit function of the PCETA is outsourced to OCO, and they provide us with the regular reports.
It is outsourced to?
To OCO. OCO.
Can you spell that for me?
A-U-R-C-O.
A-U-U-R-C-O. OCO.
OCO, yes. Those are the internal auditors of the PCETA. They provide us with regular reports, and we indeed apply our minds on those reports.
Thank you. I've just got two other questions. Given that you've now outsourced this and they are giving you reports, and given that I prefer the opinion of the Auditor General in this instance, in fact, most instances, they haven't done their work, clearly. So what are you going to do about it? I know that you're having a dispute of some kind with the Auditor General, and I will watch that with great interest to see where that goes. But the question is, the internal auditor hasn't done their job then, or am I confused?
Just to explain that, the OCO was appointed around about October 2011. And before then, there was no functional internal audit. And therefore, the period that I'm talking about that is working now is from essentially November 2011 to date. And their term of office as internal auditors is expiring end of March.
We're looking at the financial statements for 2010-11. I know that there was confusion also, and then you had to put a sticker on the front because you got the year wrong, which was quite amazing. But so what I understand then is this October 2011 doesn't feature here. This is for the next financial year.
No, apologies, 2010, October 2010.
Okay, thank you. That makes more sense. Then, finally, the chief financial officer was suspended in 2010. Can we have some feedback on what's going on?
No, I don't think that's correct for this institution. The chief financial officer, which is Tawo Sibai, has been appointed since August 2010. I don't know where you've got
okay,
information
thank you.
About
thank you very much.
You're done, Dr. George. Any follow-ups in the absence of which... Now, broadly speaking, I mean, how do you explain the state of affairs as they obtain in this report in the CETA? I mean, broadly, how do you explain this?
Yeah, Chairperson, it's a...
Actually, I would like to to get it from the CEO and then to check with you as a chairperson of the board, say, having come into this and found things like this, how are you sorting things out?
Yes, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, it has been a serious challenge. I mean, we faced an organization that clearly had no governance, proper governance structures. There were questions about its policies because of the dual management and partly where some of these services are still given by the DPSA. But since the administration and the commitment from the new executive management, we, I think, have made tremendous progress in the last 12 to 18 months to try and clean up what we had found in the PCTA, starting from an array of important policies that have been adopted by the accounting authority, including finance, procurement policy, supply chain management, fraud prevention, importantly, to ensure that there's measures, that there's no repeat of what has happened in the past. We've got a risk strategy, risk policies, internal controls as well. With the PCTA situation, prior to around August 2010, we did not have a proper finance and corporate services unit. We depended on the DPSA to fulfill those functions. And since then, we've created the capacity for a full financial function, including supply chain management, procurement. One of the intentions, interestingly, around internal audit is that it was outsourced, but come the new financial year, we would, once our funding model has been resolved by the Interministerial Committee, we would want to even create an internal audit function, because I think it's extremely important to have those checks and balances within the organization. So I think we are on a road to recovery. We are on a road to recovery. There's totally new management and staff there.
I think the presence of policies and procedures, it's a good starting point, but that's what it is, a starting point. The fundamental challenge is implementation. You can have the police in place, but if there's no compliance, then they're as good as not being there. So I thought that will be the area of focus in terms of implementation, compliance level with those policies. I'm sure we'll see at the end of the financial year what progress has been made. But I see that the report has been signed off by an administrator and not the chairperson of the board. So we have a new board in place. And
yes, sir,
how have you been playing your monitoring role over the entity to ensure that we do not have this grim picture that is before us?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Our term of office started in April 2011, and what we have done, unfortunately or fortunately, was mainly to make sure that the policies are in place, and also, as you are saying, to monitor adherence to prescripts. The procurement function has just been established, and we are monitoring closely how that is being implemented. And like you correctly say, the 2011-2012 financial year would probably indicate what progress has been made. But the board is closely monitoring adherence to prescripts.
So what will be your prediction for the next annual report?
Our prediction, Chairperson, removing the disclaimer, because right now the issue of the disclaimer is obviously with the SIU, there isn't much we can do about that. But for the finances that are in our care, those we are taking care of, and we are hoping that the executive management will assist us in that regard. Ours will be to monitor quarterly when we have our board meetings.
And we've established also committees that work closely to oversee that from the management side.
How are you interacting with the Auditor General? Because that's the entity that must come and audit you, and you need to have a sense of their expectations and how they would want to have the information presented and what are the things that they would be looking for. How have the entities subsequent to this report been interacting with the Office of the AG to...
We have been engaging closely, fortunately, with the Auditor General's office. We have just also adopted the audit plan, so we will be working in accordance with the audit plan.
I must say that, I'm happy that the internal audit function is going to be built within the entity. If there's one thing that we do not appreciate in this committee, it's the inability to build capacity within government or within the state and rely on outsourced services that at the end of the day do not assist us. By the time their contracts end and they leave, we're exactly where they found us. So we would want Deputy Minister that the funding model be finalized as soon as possible, and we have an internal audit function. Because what we do not know or understand is whether indeed that outsourced entity was giving proper reports. If it was, why were these reports not being implemented or the recommendations? Because if you have a disclaimer, then you get worried whether actually a finance department exists or not. I think that's the point. In the absence of any other, I would want us to leave it at this and say that we sincerely hope and look forward to a better outcome than this. It cannot be. We know that CETAs have come to be cast in not so good a light for whatever reasons, but reinforced by these kinds of reports. So we would like that matters be taken into account going forward. Comrade Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, honorable members, the Office of the Auditor General, thank you very much for inviting us to appear before this eminent committee. I will certainly convey the spirit of the discussion to the Minister of Higher Education, Dr. Blaise Omande. With regard to the audit outcomes of services CETA and PCETA, it is acknowledged that there are a number of areas that require further attention by the
maybe let's do this, Comrade Deputy. If you're going to give a general overview, maybe let's exhaust the services CETA first.
Okay.
So you can give an overall summation. So that we deal with this. I'm sure there might be issues specific to service sector that members may raise, and you may then need to incorporate them in your closing comments. But a disclaimer really can never be anything acceptable under no circumstances, or the severity of the issues around which the Auditor General has expressed negative opinion. Whether it's called a disclaimer or it is called a qualified audit or it's called an address, doesn't matter. But the substance that is there
is just too much. And I think CFO and CEO and chairperson, it raises issues about leadership, about management. So let's attend to this thing and make sure that they're sorted out, so that we can then begin the arduous task of ensuring that the entity delivers on its mandate, providing skills, skilling our people. I think that's very key and very important.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. From the PCTA side, we assure you that we are taking all the necessary steps to ensure that the issue of the disclaimer is a thing of the past.
Right. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Chair, just before maybe I start, I just wanted to get a clarity maybe with your office in terms of the delegation from the FCT. Because I see here we've got Dr. Moon, who's the administrator, and the Ms. Don, that's the chairperson of the audit committee. I don't know, Chair, in terms of the I've heard on the introduction that we've got a KPMG. In terms of the CFO, someone, Chairperson? Yeah, in terms of someone who's dealing with the finance, I don't know, the whole range will be dealt by the administrator. I don't know.
All right. Well, two things. No, three things. One, it is that we tried to reach out to the gentleman who for a long time served as the CEO of the services sector, Dr. Ivo Blumenthal. And in his response, we got a four-page letter from his lawyer raising all sorts of arguments from, as the lawyers would say, further particulars to there will be a cursor too much and there will be disturbance in Parliament. It might not be people fruitful to come to Cape Town and have a meaningful discussion. And that maybe this forum might not be the appropriate place to come and give his perspective on things. But I've requested that a copy be given to Advocate Jenkins. And depending on the discussions we have here, to see if we cannot take it forward, depending on what comes out of here, if it points to some level of accountability that he must still give as an individual, it is something we may need to consider in terms of pursuing and ensuring that he comes in account. The second one is from the former Chief Financial Officer, Vemon Naidu, that we also said he needs to come. He also has a three-pager, but this is not from his lawyer, it's from himself. And goes into a whole range of the historical background of how he came to be removed as the chief financial officer and the administrator being put in place, to the fact that the interim audit report that he saw was actually a clean audit. and that whatever else has happened subsequent, only Dr. Moon should be able to account and talk to the issues that are raised. Although the letter is dated the 1st of March, but we only got it on Monday. The third element is that the just like the PCTA, the services CTA also outsourced its internal audit function to KPMG, and that's why we have the gentleman the back who is there to talk to us to some of these issues. So yes, that is why we have the representation as it is. Dr. Moon, yes, is the main man, so to speak, in terms of the issues that are going to be raised and discussed. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I thought maybe I should highlight on that fact before we go on. I'll be dealing with the irregular expenditure management, procurement and contract, compliance with the laws and regulations. So like Honorable Ravi, the issues, they are interrelated somehow, and they overlap to one another. When you speak to this one, the other one comes out. So that I'll try and cluster them as they appear here. We will then first talk about the irregular expenditure. When you turn to page 78, there's the amount of irregular expenditure. The total amount is 73,462,000. It's in two folds. The first one is the irregular in which resulted from the payment of several packages. Can we, and it's the one actually that actually has led to one reason that the AG gave the entity a qualified opinion, 76. Yes. Can we talk to that one? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Member, we have embraced each of the opinions identified by the Auditor General in the management report. Indeed, the issue of the severance packages was a key element. And I think the entire executive management team were beneficiaries of the severance packages. And as we speak, that matter is a subject of investigation by the NPA. So yes, we accept the finding, and we are taking appropriate action to correct them.
Okay. If I can just follow up on that, and the matter is under investigation. For how long have you started the proceedings of the investigation?
We placed the case with the Hawks in May last year, but we are keeping in touch with the NPA, and we are advised that the matter is receiving attention.
Thank you for the response. The second one is the irregular expenditure to the amount of 86,197,615 resulted from CETA in exceeding its 12.5% limit on administration expenditure.
Yes, we embrace that as well. You will see if you go to the management report that essentially the Auditor General is saying that there has been the absence of systems, procedures, and policies in the entity. And the amount you're mentioning is part of that, as you know, that we should remain within the 10%. We've gone beyond that, and the severance package is partly account for that as well.
And according to the AG, no authorization was obtained to that level.
Indeed, none. We have no evidence that even the accounting authority authorized those the expenditure.
Any, as I say, it overlaps. Any disciplinary measures? Who's responsible for this irregular expenditure? The one that we're talking to.
Chair, the entire executive team, as I'm sure the members will know, resigned. And the entire team is subject of the investigation I'm referring to.
If I follow correctly, saying that this one also is also under investigation, or it's because when you check here on the disclosure notes to page 77, disciplinary steps taken or criminal proceeding, under this one that I'm talking to, there's none, there's nothing in terms of what you have there.
Yes, indeed, they are linked, as you correctly indicated, Honourable Member. They are very much related. Because, as I say, in the absence of policies, procedures, and systems, these kind of things indeed do happen. But what we have identified very concretely is a matter of the severance packages, which is something we can follow, and we are following concretely.
Yeah, but what she's saying is that in the report, under steps taken, it says none. And yet your responses are investigations are proceeding.
No, Chair. The management report indicates that steps taken, none. But following the investigation and the processes subsequent to the Auditor General's report, several steps have indeed been taken. And they include us putting in place the necessary systems and necessary procedures, including delegations of authority, including
In relation to the exceeding the 12.5%, there are no measures taken or investigations done against the officials or the people concerned.
The investigation is part. You are saying that we have 73 million altogether. The 73 million has to do, number one, with the severance packages illegally paid out. Number two, they have to do with the management operating outside the PFMA. And the investigation that we're referring to is attending to all of those matters.
Okay.
The matters are linked, as I indicated.
All right.
So maybe to I should have assisted the committee in starting by asking Dr. Mo how long he has been the administrator for the entity, and what are the positive or the work involved in this entity that maybe it will be able to guide us on. What is it, steps which have been taken to, regarding officials and people who have resigned, so that we are able to, hence I said, Chair, these matters, they overlap to one another. Maybe I should have started there. Then, therefore, I would like to ask the administrator to say how long he's been acting, and does he have a team in terms of officials in the senior management who are trying to build up, to turn around this entity?
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Moon has been involved since the 26th of April last year, but for the better part of, I think, 4 or 5 months of last year, the services CETA has been at legal loggerheads with the Minister of Higher Education and Training, which really affected what we could do in that period. So it has been since the 26th of April. Members will know that the legal matters were resolved as an out-of-court settlement only in July last year. So it is only from July that you could really operate, you know, and function properly in the entity. Yes, a number of colleagues internally and from outside have been brought together to try and turn things around. So there is a team to turn things around.
You refer to some of the problems being the lack of the systems and all of you. I just want to feature in the role of the internal audit committee, which is outsourced. What is their role in this regard, and how long have this role has been within the outsourced company? Just want to check the one.
Oh, okay. We inherited the that situation, but as I understand it, it has been the case since the beginning of the entity. The beginning is 2000.
So I think the Deputy Minister, as you came in, you decided that you should put in and administrate the company. KPMG has been there since its inception, 2000, until, I can't say until now, probably maybe I can say until last year or until 2010, when then there was some challenges. I just wanted to ask, all these mishaps or all these challenges that have occurred in this entity, surely the internal audit is the one that would pick on some of the issues and advise accordingly. I just want to get, what was the role of the internal audit, which supposedly I think it has been paid. I think we'll come later to that one, but I just wanted to get, how much are we paying KPMG? But if we can get, the deficiencies have been there for 11 years. Under the very professional KPMG, very highly professional body, there was no advice, there was nothing. Can we get a sense on that one? Thank you.
Well, I'm sure colleagues from the KPMG are going to respond, but you see, Honourable Member, if you look at the management report, the matters that we have that are being identified in the main go back, they're not only dealing with the financial year in question, they go back a bit of time. So, yes, one needs to pose pertinent questions both to the internal auditors, and I suspect the external auditors. And part of the reason was the chair of our own audit committee here is so that we can also pose those pertinent questions, because it's not just about the past financial year. There are issues around the absence of systems, I mean, basic procedures and so on. The fact that these were only picked up last year by the Auditor General is a matter of interest for us, which I raise in my own report, I think, diplomatically. But I am making the point that at some point it is very important for us to confront that question, how it is that for such a long time these matters were not picked up. Because members will know that this particular entity has been lauded as one of the best performing theaters for a long time. And we come in, we uncover not just technical matters, but substantive lapses in accounting and so on. So it's a question I embrace. and we'll ask our colleagues from KPMG to tell their story.
No, that's fine. Let's start with the KPMG and also the audit committee. Maybe before we go to KPMG, how much are they paid annually for their services?
Mr. Chair, if my memory serves me correct, in 2011, yeah, we were paid $275,000.
Last year, $200,000 thereabout. Okay, that's fine. But then let's talk to the substance of the issues in the entity and how the KPMG dealt with the issues, how you saw the issues, how you escalated the issues, and what were the responses to the issues that you raised.
In 2011, we had minimal issues that we reported in our internal audit reports. I think maybe it's appropriate just to reflect on how the scope of the work that we did and how it was approached. In terms of the scope, the audits that we reviewed, we did a balance between what I call risk-based audits and compliance audits. The plan is presented to the audit committee and was approved by the audit committee. And then based on that, and subject obviously to the limitation of the time and the budget, we selected a sample and we selected samples and did our appropriate testing in terms of that plan. When we raised findings, we presented them to management and they either agreed with the findings or provided the evidence to substantiate why were incorrect, or in other words, provide the substantiating the evidence that the controls were there. And then based on that, we updated our working papers and reported accordingly. So in summary, I suppose, the net findings of the internal audit reports, the four internal audit reports that we did do in 2010-2011 when I was involved there, there were no material findings, which is, I suppose, a surprise to me now.
What is surprising?
Sorry?
What is surprising?
That the Auditor General came out with their report that there were so many significant findings, if I can put it that way, in terms of irregular expenditure and procurement and contract management.
All right. You said we're the chairperson of the audit committee. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members.
We have that mic switched off at the back. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman, Honourable members. I think we need to first say that if you look at the audit plan and the scope of the internal auditors at the services CETA had always done very little work based on the scope and the plan that was approved by management. I think that's the first thing that we need to say. If you look at the size of an organization of Service CETA, to only earn 200 plus thousand rand is already an indication thereof. Now, before the middle of 2011, early 2011, the audit committee also didn't have many meetings and probably didn't function as effectively as it should, because they were not independent. The majority of audit committee members were actually council members as well. All of that changed when independent members were appointed in 2010. That was myself and one other member who also coincidentally, and I think I need to put that on record, was a senior manager of KPMG before he no longer is at KPMG. We then had a look at that audit plan, and one of the first things that we said is that not all the areas are covered. This was in August of 2011. We then agreed on an increased scope to ensure that all areas of internal audit were covered efficiently and effectively, and that everything would be done by March 2011. And that indeed is going to be the case. And regrettably, many of the findings that were done by the Auditor General have been confirmed by KPMG now because of the change in scope. I think the important point, though, that I would like to highlight as well to members is that if you look at the internal audit standards, it is very clear that if management overrides many of the controls and gives responses that one can perhaps put question marks behind, then internal audit will not know and be none the wiser. So there were no red flags and no red traffic lights going up. And now that we know that there was substantial override in management controls, we were able to actually go beyond that and say how far back have these actually been overridden? And we have been able to determine with certainty that as far back as 2007, 2008, there have been override of controls. And perhaps the one last point that I would like to make is that all contact from the internal audit perspective as well as the Auditor General perspective was centered in one individual, and that was the previous CFO, which in itself poses problems because those are the responses what you get, and you don't test the severity and the veracity of those responses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Comrade Shlwane.
Comrade Ross, I'm not going to ask anything. I'll leave it for you to do the follow-up. No, it's fine. I just wanted to chair to thank the chair of the audit committee to put it on record and the KPMG. That I think the most of the problems is that there was management overriding in terms of decisions taken by the audit committee and the internal committee. I think I'll hope so. And one hopes that when the investigations come to a close, just hope that we find these people who are responsible, if they haven't yet left the country or what have you, because a system takes long, maybe probably to get this person, to get the affected ones. Chair, then I'll then move to, it's not that much, Chair, move to expenditure management. In view of the above of the irregular expenditures, there were no effective and appropriate steps taken by the, I don't know whether it's the previous management or is it now the administrator, to prevent the irregular expenditure, especially that one of budgeting of exceeding your budget with 2%.
That Honourable Chair refers to the previous management. There are now steps to avoid that situation being taken.
Chairperson. See the disadvantage of calling the entity that is run by administrator. But it's fine, Chair. Let me continue and do my work. On the procurement and contract management.
Which one? If you are not going to be like Hosh, I'm tempted, you know, to say we were facing a similar challenge as yesterday. The Deputy Minister, because when we now ask for the rationale of decisions taken, Dr. Moon cannot answer those questions. Why was there no compliance with laws and legislation? You see, no, those people were crazy. I will not allow this under my administration. But they can't tell us why it happened, because we're dealing with what has happened. And this is a result of Parliament always having before it new people in management. And since the beginning of this year,
all the hearings that we've had, from Public Works, COGTA, or Accept Health, up to yesterday, RTMC, all the issues we're dealing with, they were saying, no, we have opened cases against these people, they've squandered so much money, we're outraged as well. So, what can we do? What questions can we ask on all these findings? But I know you're very intelligent. Let me give it back to you.
Chairperson, I think you've said it aloud, but maybe we should talk in terms of compliance, in terms of the law and regulations. There seem to be a lot, whole of range of issues which were raised by the AG in terms of compliance and regulations. I think it's page 44. From page 43 to page 44. But there's this this one that is most popular. The one of people doing a business who did not declare their interest, who are working within the state. They do business with the state. And I think we've got one issue that is being raised here. I think that's a popular one. I think maybe the administration will be able to talk on it. And the second one that I think is, all of them are important, but I just wanted to highlight a few. The one of there was no sufficient appropriate audit evidence. It was not obtained for goods and services with a transaction value of over 500,000. There are a lot, just to mention, just because, not that I'm intelligent, just because I've tried to page through this report. But I think I submit myself. I'm done after the response, and then other members will then go for follow-up. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The team of the Auditor General is here. You see, Chair, when we came in, there was an extreme level of hostility to the auditing process, to the point that we had to come in and sort of mediate to try and ensure that the documentation was made available. They will tell you that they actually struggled to get hold of information because the environment was so hostile in the entity at the time. So we have endeavored to get hold of some of the documentation that was required, and some of the documents we simply couldn't get hold of. Conflict of interest, yes, massive conflict of interest with respect to the board itself and some employees. Members will know that that board was subsequently dissolved, and that we have no board as we speak. But moving forward, we have arranged to ensure that we attend to that issue of conflict of interest. With respect to staff, we've insisted that everyone declare their conflict. We have identified one or two cases which we're attending to. But other than that, one needs to say that there has been massive conflict of interest issues in the entity, both with members of staff but also board members.
Commodore?
No, I hope we're not getting KPMG off the hook completely. Yes, somebody said, I think the chair of the audit committee said they had limited scope. You know, but they were there for 11 years. If their scope was so limited, Why did they not turn around to, or maybe they did turn around to the minister, to somebody in authority and say, look, we have such limited scope, we can't do our work. It's not a question of only receiving 200,000 rand a year. It is a question they were given the responsibility of the internal audit. And what I think we're hearing here today, that these four or five qualifications did not arise overnight. Irregular expenditure, reliability of reported performance information, problems with the annual financial statements, they did not just arise overnight. They arose over a period of time. And I am just not convinced that KPMG did all in its power that it could, even within its limited scope, to ensure that these laws and regulations that the PSMA was adhered to, so that you did not have these things like illegal severance packages arising. So, Chair, I'm feeling very uneasy. We're letting KPMG off the hook because of their limited scope. Tell me, what was their scope then? If their scope did not encompass irregular expenditure, it did not encompass financial statements, it did not encompass policies, procedures, processes, hang, what were they doing there for 11 years then? And again, if they felt they could not do their task given to them of internal audit, did they not say so to somebody in authority? Our scope is too limited. You are paying us too little, give us more, extend our scope, and then we'll uncover the root causes which have now resulted in this qualification. I'm not convinced. I'm really just not convinced. It's not the money, it's the responsibility that they were given.
Well, I want us to let KPMG off the hook. I wanted to let them off the hook because, as you heard yesterday, the Minister of Transport is reporting Deloitte to their professional body for agreeing to be part of cleaning up the financials of the Road Traffic Management Corporation. You recall that you also had Ernst & Young at the SAA sitting there for years and raking in the millions and not doing anything. So to expect that KPMG would have been ethical and did anything different, I think it's being unfair to them from the perspective and the orientation of these kind of entities. They are there to make money out of government, period. So that's why I'm saying let's leave them off the hook. They could not have behaved any different.
To the committee, we are keenly awaiting this AG's report and consultants. I imagine that some of the firms we are now talking about will feature in those reports. I think we need to do an extensive research, perhaps our researchers, an extensive research of how many of these accounting firms are doing business with government departments and government entities, and in what capacity. So we can anticipate that report and perhaps be ready for it and Parliament can take appropriate resolutions on the matter. But I think we need to know how extensive is the work that these private accounting firms are doing for government and government entities, what their functions are, what they're being paid, and what if we're getting value for money. So somewhere along the line, I think we need perhaps our own audit of who's doing what in terms of the private sector or government when it comes to internal audit functions.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I think we'll, I'm sure by the end of April, that report will be out from the AG on the use of consultants. We have always stressed the point that we must build capacity within the public service. Within the public service. And like Comrade Roy, you were rightly asking, if the state has an investigating arm called FIU, but then the state itself is the first to run away from that entity and go to private institutions, I don't know who it is they expect to use
to use the SIU when it is always half or even a quarter of the cost that they would incur from these private companies, when they would do a substantively better job than these private companies. So it is a challenge that I think we need to continuously talk to and see how officials... Well, Commerce Deputy Minister, maybe we have one more question. All right.
Okay, in the report, the CFO function, am I correct? The CFO function for the services CETA is vacant and has now also been filled by a firm of consultants. Am I right? ANF Consultants, is that right? Can you perhaps explain the rationale behind that and why that is and what we are paying these people and what their contract is? How long do you expect them to be there? Why can't we appoint a CFO?
We have advertised that position, Honourable Member. The accounting firm that is performing that function was initially brought in not only to perform that function, but also to help us to overhaul the department, the finance department. We have advertised and we're in the process of filling the vacancy.
Two different accounting firms working in the same entity.
Completely different functions.
So you couldn't give KPMG, who were doing the internal audit function, you felt you couldn't also give them...
It would be a conflict of interest. They can't perform both functions.
Mangena and... Oh, yeah. Dr. Ravi and Dr. George. Yeah. I think I'm depressed. I almost forgotten about you.
Chairperson, thank you. On the issue of the ANF consultants, are we really saving or are we losing the ANF consultants? Are there any savings on them? I know they're helping us to do whatever they're doing, but do we really save by having them? Saving the money, the extra money that we are supposed to. I mean, if we had a CFO, wouldn't be paying him those millions that we are really giving out to ANF. We'll be giving him a salary, not even a quarter of what we are giving them, maybe a 20th of what we are giving them.
Just note the question, Dr. Rab. So we take all the three questions and then...
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the page 32, staff turnover. Apparently you had, you appointed 38 people and you had 22 resignations in your CETA. And you say this is due to the turbulence which you experienced last year. Can you explain what is meant by turbulence and why the number of resignations? Because you need continuity, and it's rather, I think it's important for the community to take note of this phenomenon. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of KPMG, I was surprised that you were surprised that the outcome was the way it was. But the way the audit process works is that the auditor does present a management report to management, and then they respond on that. And then ultimately we see the consequences. So I would be very interested to see the management report from KPMG to the services CETA. That's the one thing. And the other thing is that Mr. Blumenthal and the CFO, apparently chairperson, as you mentioned, have written to say that there are reasons why they couldn't be here today. I think we must take all steps possible to get them here so that we can look at them and ask them questions. Because the difficulty I have is that I have a feeling that we're washing garbage. Because as you mentioned, chairperson, is that we see the same old thing over and over again, and I'm a new member of this committee. We see a bunch of officials highly esteemed group of officials who are unable to answer our questions. because they are new and through no fault of their own are unable to answer the questions because all the other people are gone. The accountability lies with the executive. And the executive is unable to give us any answers either because they don't know what's going on. The minister, in the response, in the document, writes here, he has pleasure in providing us with these documents. I'm really struggling to see what pleasure he could possibly find in this instance. So I do think that we as a committee must really have a look at this and say, well, what are we actually doing and how are we going to hold the executive to account, because this is not the way to do it. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Dr. Moon.
Honourable Chairman and members, the first question with regards to whether we are getting value for money from the consultants. At this point we are, because they are addressing the issues from the Auditor General Management Report, which we as Audit Committee are actually monitoring very closely. The Audit Committee at the Service CETA is meeting on a monthly basis to ensure that the Auditor General management letter issues are addressed. And ANF consultants have been instrumental in assisting with that, and we have seen the movement. That's from the ANF side. As far as internal audit is concerned, there are two responses, or it's two-pronged. Before the Auditor General audit opinion and audit report was published for the financial year ending 2011, the management reports from KPMG were pretty much clean, because after they came with their findings, they were disputed and resolved by management, and particularly the previous CFO. So by the time the audit reports summaries were presented to the audit committee, they were pretty much all resolved. What we then as an audit committee
did... they resolved in quotes.
Honourable Chairman, I would think so, because what we did to ascertain that that could not be, the audit committee asked KPMG to do a follow-up for the period April to September of last year to find out whether the same issues were occurring within the organization at that point with the same, pretty much the same staff, but without the executives. And they came up with an extensive report that ran to more than 100 pages, which they presented to the audit committee and management, indicating that these matters were problematic, and they indeed confirmed that the findings went back to 2007. And the only difference being that there wasn't a middle person from management saying that this is not so. So they are confirming the Auditor General report.
We have not, Honourable Member, employed anyone. True, resignations have occurred. The entire senior executive members resigned. At the beginning of this year, we advertised all our senior positions. The only, we have a new HR manager. That's the only new employment that we have. People have resigned of their own accord. I'm not sure if it had to do with the turbulences, but we have had people who are leaving the organization. But we have, apart from the HR manager, we have not employed anyone new as yet. Thank you.
When are you employing new ones?
We have advertised, Chair, and we're hoping that by the end of May we will have the entire team, hopefully.
All right. Thanks very much. I do think... to George, that if you listen to the input of the chair of the audit committee with two challenges which severely impacted on your internal controls, the scope of the internal audit function was highly circumscribed. And secondly, the audit committee itself was not made up of independent people. Board members, if I got you well, were also members of the audit committee. And yet the audit committee is supposed to report to, it's supposed to report to them. So you have governance issues. I mean, the governance arrangements were such that it would defeat any independent probing that was to happen there. I do think there is merit in considering your suggestion around some of the leading personalities who are running the institution in terms of how do we get them to be here so that we can look them in the eyes and get better answers to some of these things. But, Comrade Deputy Minister, I want to hand over to you if there are issues that you may want to talk to. Safe to say that I hope we now have an appreciation of the kind of frustration that we have to go through. And that maybe it might actually be in the interest of these sitters and the interest of the executive to say, how do we have regular interaction with the audit committee so that the reports that they give management are also fed to the political leadership, so you are aware of the issues that are being raised, and so that when you interact with management in terms of your normal channels, you have a sense of what is happening and you can therefore discuss from an informed position and can assist the processes be fully informed. Yesterday we kept on repeating, let's fix the things, and the things that were fixed, let them remain fixed, so that we don't have your one step forward, two steps back. We're here today, there is forward movement, and then a year and a half later, Dr. Moon has left, the chairperson of the audit committee has left, the PCTA leadership has left with new people, and they start from scratch. And the cycle goes on and on and on and on. And our institutions of state don't get built, they don't mature to reach the levels that would ensure that there is that culture of accountability and appreciation that we operate in rules-based environments. So, I suppose that is a political challenge that needs to be addressed at that level. It's a political challenge that needs to be addressed at that level so that we don't start from scratch all the time. I think that's the frustration that we have this side. But I'll leave it to you. There are probably issues you've picked up and I want to talk to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, Office of the AG. I would really like to thank the Standing Committee on Public Accounts for giving us an opportunity to have a deeper appreciation and understanding of the challenges that we have to tackle that affect our two entities under discussion today. With regard to the audit outcomes of services CETA and PCETA, it is acknowledged that there are a number of areas that require further attention by the current accounting authorities of the two entities. And I think the issues were clearly articulated, Mr. Chairperson, by honorable members. They were clearly articulated by Dr. Ravi and Dr. George and Ms. Chilwane. From the side of the ministry, as I said, we will have to apply our mind very, very carefully and
and find a strategic response of strengthening our own systems. But also, we will give full support to the management of these entities so as to enable them to deal with all matters that have been discussed today. It is acknowledged that concerns raised are serious, and I heard clearly the Honourable Member saying, you know, this is what we mean when we talk about perverse matters, and I think we are also deeply concerned. In the process, there are many lessons, I must say, learned in terms of appropriate administration and risk, the importance of risk management, putting risk management systems in place. The entities, Mr. Chairperson and Honourable Members, have clearly taken full responsibility for past practices, and there is a commitment to improve management systems and adherence to general accounting procedures. Of course, the statement which is in the entity's audit report, which is perceived to be casting doubt to the capabilities and image of the Auditor General, his office is regrettable. Our officials have unambiguously apologized. Although many actions have been taken to date, it's clear that much more is required in order to clear this unfortunate history and to vigorously pursue important tasks for which these entities were established. From the side of the Ministry and the Department, as I said, we pledge full support and cooperation. Our plea is to attain a speedy resolution of all matters to the satisfaction of Parliament through SCOPA, the Auditor General, and the public at large. The Minister, in particular, Dr. Blaine Zimande, respects the fact that CETAs are a creation of legal and statutory entities to perform their functions and responsibility within the prescripts of the Skills Development Act. It is therefore required from the Minister as legislative authority of this Act assigned by Presidential Proclamation to take the appropriate steps that are allowed within the law. Both of these CETAs, Honourable Members, as it has been said here for the record, were placed under administration when the Minister became aware of financial irregularities. In the case of Services CETA, the Minister was even challenged in court not to exercise the intervention powers provided by the Act. This investigation under discussion today is further evidence to the fact that the ministry acted correctly and timelessly when we became aware that there were serious allegations that needed to be attended as a matter of agency. We will continue then to provide support to ensure that all matters are fully resolved, and also that policies and financial management systems, risk management systems are also in place. But above everything, we will ensure that there is a close monitoring of these entities, so that our internal audit committees could draw our attention to any form of malpractice timelessly. With those few words, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we thank you very much for an enlightening
session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Comrade Deputy Minister. I'm sure the desire to interact with the audit committee will be extended to the department as well. So it's not just the entity, but and it is a call we're making to all ministers, their departments, their entities. Let's be vigilant. No, thanks very much. We hope that beyond today, we'll seek to continuously strengthen the capacity of the entities to change this situation for the better. I think that's all we can hope for. I want to thank members and the Auditor General's Office as well as National Treasury. And to say to members, in relation to the possibility of tomorrow, we should be able to communicate very soon. I'm talking about those who are supposed to go to that trainer, something in Gauteng. We'll communicate during the course of the day. But thanks very much. We've come to the end of our meeting. Thank you.